Right, exactly right. And I want to point out that I actually introduced this document in a motion to reopen discovery after a trial. And my hope is that we will get discovery and get someone to a deposition table and get the answer to that.
Before Eric Holder was attorney general, he was a senior partner at Covington & Burling. Among the banks they represented, the four largest, Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo.
No shock there.
Linda Torelli, attorney representing clients being foreclosed on. Kevin Whalen of Home Defenders League, thanks so much for joining us. That does it for our broadcast. DemocracyNow.org is our website. Thanks to Mike Burke, Renee Felsar, Mate Nirmi Sheikh, Steve Martinez. I'm Amy Goodman, Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition.
Oh, okay, climate change deniers, you've gone too far.
Yes, you
have. You've gone from just being annoying,
We're going to slow him down.
They have. This is the great Jim Hightower commentary about climate change and beer.
Oh, boy.
Now, I talked about it last week. I didn't have it with me. So later today, this is a reason to listen, let me tell you. And this is a great show today. We've got a lot of stories to get in about local news, Dearborn and the surrounding area, like no other radio station on your dial. And thank you for tuning in. My name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor here. Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director, is here. Say hello, Dennis.
Hello, Dennis.
Okay. And John Conroy, our downriver reporter extraordinaire from our WHFR staff. Hi, John.
Hello, folks. How you doing?
Okay. And John's all geeked up today because he's famous. He was in a downriver paper, a photo spread, in fact. Was it a ping pong championship, John?
Ping pong 3 days a week on Gross Hill.
Wow. Heavy duty.
Well, three days a week. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's almost like exercise.
I would think, yeah, and you should, 3 days a week. No, but I mean, that's ping pong, if you're good at it, I mean, you're moving pretty fast there, aren't you?
We have a great time mentally and physically and socially.
All right.
Now, you can't ask for anything else. Is that in the recreation center somewhere in Gross Hill?
Yes, it's a community center that's part of our whole recreation outfit over there on Gross Hill. Okay.
And is it only for selective audiences, like seniors only? Or
it's for all who want to have fun.
Wow. Ping pong, Gross Hill. Who would have thought?
Yeah, really?
Yeah. I love ping pong myself, but I never could find a room that had a high enough ceiling for those really masterful shots, you know, that go up 30, 40 feet.
Do you get a little crazy?
Yeah, get a little crazy. You know? Wow. Yeah, and spike it, you know, and boom. Oh, well. Anyway, great fun. Well, we're here with you because there's all kinds of stories and all kinds of papers, and the one that I wanted to start with today, even though I can't seem to find one of the stories. It was in the paper this last Wednesday in the press and guide. Severstal, okay, you know that name? They're the big Russian-owned plant here in the east side of Dearborn for making steel, okay? And Press and Guide only reported this much. Daniel Lai, by the way, wrote this.
Oh, really?
So he must be sort of freelancing along with his position at Access.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they need all the reporters they can get because, as we learned here, Inside Information, Joe Slezak has moved on to another job somewhere else, and he was their key reporter for stories like this. So they're probably grabbing people wherever they can find them.
So people know Daniel Lai is the former editor of our local patch.com, DearbornPatch.com.
That's correct.
I'm back after being away for a little bit. Yeah. I do want to say that the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at the college or even the radio station. I've been waiting weeks to say that. I walk around my house saying it, and it doesn't mean anything there, you know?
Let's call it a disclaimer, folks. But yeah. We do appreciate Henry Ford Community College allowing us to do this, and we do try to be fair as much as possible.
Absolutely.
And so here is the story about Severstal, and this is important, folks. Severstal North America's plan to revise a long-held emissions permit with the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality is getting mixed reaction from local residents. The Detroit Free Press reports that if approved, the permit would update Severstal's current agreement with the MDEQ, You remember, that's the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, allowing the steelmaker to release higher volumes of toxins. You know what a toxin is, folks?
It's not good.
No, it's a poison, all right? Including 725 times more lead. And lead is not good for you.
No.
Although, you know when people say, get the lead out?
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't get all this lead out once it gets into you. And they're going to be releasing that in the atmosphere if this permit is approved. They could, anyway. In addition, carbon monoxide emissions, I think that's what kills you in a garage. You want to commit suicide and you get the car running? Okay. Would be approved to more than double. Not that I'm recommending you keep your car on in the garage and start inhaling. No. So it would be approved to more than double the past rate. Allowed volatile organic compound releases would rise sharply. And those were allowed before, but they're volatile organic. Volatile means
not
poof.
Stable.
Right. They're not stable. They could go up. Maybe they're flammable. I don't know. Volatile means they're explosive in some way.
So volatile and toxin. Let's keep a track of the bouncing ball
right,
here.
Right. Two toxins. The carbon monoxide does kill you if you get enough of it. And the lead, 725 times more.
Sure.
And also allowances for what's called PM10, which is fine dust emissions.
Mm.
And also manganese.
Manganese,
yeah.
Which we need, but probably not in the volumes they're picking it out.
No, it's in a lot of little vitamins. I always wonder why, but not this much. Would rise between 2 and 5 times the levels approved in Severstal's 2006 permit. Zanab Huber, an employee at Access, a community nonprofit, of course, we know, located in Dearborn South End, says, it isn't right. We already have children and adults that suffer from multiple health issues linked to pollutants from other factories in the city. Haynad is a female person. She says people need to be aware about what's going on and speak up. MDEQ and Severstal officials have argued that the permit does not allow an increase in pollutants, but merely corrects an oversight due to out-of-date information.
Hmm.
The permit Severstal is seeking, this is a quote from the MDEQ, does not authorize, this is from Severstal, does not authorize us to emit more pollutants. The permit is a technical correction that is based upon the results of stringent testing rather than upon estimates. With this permit correction, Severstal will continue to meet all applicable state and federal air regulations.
So they were saying that the original standards were set too low and that it wasn't reflective in 2006.
Right. The standards weren't based on good
factor
science or
estimates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And they conclude that by saying, the company said this. So the company's saying that it's just a technical thing, that it's not really going to be more pollutants. It actually is going to be more pollutants from everything I've read here in another story I'm going to share with you. But it's totally safe.
Severstal, I don't want to accuse them of anything, but you could look at this as a spin. You could look at what their rhetoric is.
Of course. It's just like any large company. They'll do anything they can legally to make more money.
Sure.
Why? That is their number one, in fact, only priority is to make money, and in fact, to make more if they can.
Sure.
I mean, that's the way it goes. And I'm not saying anything about their fact being Russian owned. They've invested more than $1.7 billion in the 100-year-old steel mill since purchasing it in 2004. Of course, I wonder, how much money did they make? They wouldn't still be here if they didn't make probably most of that back already.
They wouldn't have invested if they didn't have hopes of making it back.
Right, of course.
Exactly.
That's why they came to this country.
Sure.
And, of course, the city of Dearborn has given them fantastic tax breaks anyway, in order to make that purchase possible, I know, and they still got that ongoing for, I think, a decade or more.
Wasn't there a big lump, some amount of money that was given by Severstal?
They've given little contributions here and there.
I thought there was one in the millions recently.
Well, that's still nothing compared to probably the profits they're making on this.
Sure.
During the time since they bought it, and they had to upgrade it, of course, they installed 2 state-of-the-art, state-of-the-art, air pollution control bag houses, it's called, in 2007 as part of their facility modernization project, which probably was demanded by the MDEQ anyway, I think.
Right.
Anyway, it reduced metal particles, lead, and manganese emissions. Well, of course, because 100 years ago, we didn't even know about any of this. You could pollute all you wanted, you know. So, of course, they needed to modernize it. Of course, they needed to do something. But they're seeking a correction to its air permit to more accurately reflect actual emission levels. Well, I say maybe the actual emission level shouldn't be there either, shouldn't be that high either. I don't care what the state said is safe. Just like with radiation, the more you get, the worse off you are, you know. And if it's toxic, it's toxic. Well, who cares about a little bit of poison in your body? Yeah, but it accumulates, folks. Sure. So maybe over the years, all of a sudden there will be a problem. Severstal did follow a plan, do, check, and act approach. It planned the modernization emissions control based on available information. They did everything right, they say. Now, a public hearing and informational session will take place. Well, it already did take place. This story appeared in Wednesday's Press and Guide. Thank you very much. I wonder, when did they get the story? You know, probably Monday morning, right before they went to press, because we all missed it. If you wanted to go to that public hearing, it would have been at Henry Ford Community College MTEC on the east side there on Schaefer Road, along with the MDEQ. Wow, MDEQ planned this, and they don't get the word out? Did you hear? And did any of our listeners hear about this in advance? Maybe Access did, because they were quoted in the story, so they must have known before the story went out. But how do you get the word out to everybody in Dearborn, everybody in the east side, especially, who lives near this plant? And so that hearing is over and done with. It does say that members of the public who cannot attend the meeting can send comments about the proposed emissions permit revision until tonight, which is Wednesday.
Right.
Oh, isn't that nice? Again, if you miss the meeting, it's too late already to even send any written comments.
At best, this could have been on the website on Tuesday. So at best, you had maybe a day's notice. And like the lady you quoted in the article, she said the point here is awareness.
This is a City of Dearborn issue, too, I'd say.
Yeah.
The City of Dearborn should have activated their Nixle or whatever they have. You know, this should not be allowed. Hey, Severstal may be totally right in that there are some scientists that say that this higher level is actually safe.
Right.
But I don't want it. I'm sorry. Okay, and I'll hold a grudge. I'll never buy anything with Severstal steel in it if I can figure out what has Severstal steel in it.
Yeah. That may be more trouble than it's worth, Jay.
Mix it together.
Sure. A little Severstal.
So, and you say, well, that's just the Press and Guide, and it's not really a big story. Well, it was in the Free Press, and I don't know what day, because
right.
the Press and Guide or Access saw this in the Free Press. And then this is in... from Michigan Radio, that is based in Ann Arbor, but it's three stations that the University of Michigan has license for, Ann Arbor, Flint, and somewhere else. There's three stations that Michigan Radio, so-called, owns, the U of M, and in Ann Arbor. But anyway, on their website, in the environment and science category, a Dearborn steel mill wants the state to let it legally emit more air pollution, a prospect that doesn't sit well with many of the people who live nearby. The massive 350-acre Severstal Steel Complex sits in a heavily industrial area along the Dearborn-Detroit border. It's been cited, get this, 37 times for violating its current state air quality permit.
Well, then of course they want to change
but of
the
course,
rule.
Yeah, Severstal thinks that permit was too strict. In its new permit applications, the company wants the MDEQ to raise the emissions cap for a number of pollutants, including lead and carbon monoxide that we talked about before. That angers many South Dearborn residents. Several of them are quoted in the story. Nuria Ahmed says, we cannot allow for an increase in permitted levels simply because Severstal, once again, can't meet those standards. We're not asking for them to be shut down. We're just asking that they do whatever it takes to help the community and them coexist. Yeah, does a corporation exist at all? It doesn't. It's not a person, despite what Mitt Romney says, okay, on the Supreme Court of the U.S., I'm disagreeing with the Supreme Court of the U.S.
As you are allowed to
do. And you did state that disclaimer earlier.
I did.
I'm welcome to my opinion.
So if you're just coming on now, he is welcome to his opinion.
Right. And it's not the colleges necessarily. Right. But without compromise, she says, this is okay. You can do business here, but don't compromise the health of the residents. Other residents echoed Ahmed's concerns about the cumulative health aspects, impacts on a community that's literally sick already of pollution. Okay, for years and years and years, that's known to be a place where you shouldn't breathe the air.
Right.
I mean, decades upon decades. I mean, when I grew up, we all knew the air is really bad, not just a steel plant, but other, I think there was a, what was it, a concrete refinery or a plaster refinery downriver? I mean, in that same area that was just polluting like crazy, and people were always gasping for breath, and the skies were always dark, even if it was sunny elsewhere in Detroit.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible area. And, of course, so people have been sick of pollution literally there for a long time. Deborah Graham begged MDEQ, EDEQ officials, so at the meeting, I guess.
So this is a follow-up.
Right? Yeah, because this is later. This is just from yesterday.
Okay.
To deny the new permit. She says, I'm tired of being sick. She says her family was affected by a 2000 fire at a hazardous waste facility in nearby Romulus. I guess she lives in Romulus, but still, it's a statewide issue. Our bodies, our systems can't handle anymore. But state officials point out that the Severstal plant, which produces millions of tons of steel each year, won't actually increase its emissions. MDEQ spokesman Brad Werfel said the current permit might have set unrealistic standards for such an enormous facility.
If it's safe, then those aren't unrealistic standards.
For such an enormous, what does he mean by that? Because you've got a big plant, you can pollute, but if you've got a little plant, you can't pollute.
Okay. Yeah.
The same amount is okay.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, and no sense to me. He says there's not really much point in having standards if the day-to-day operations can't reliably meet those standards, said Werfel, adding that the plant has never exceeded overriding state and federal air quality standards. Well, how can Werfel from MDAQ say that when they already cited them 37 times for pollution? What, some different kinds of pollution? This is really contradictory, folks. And now the MDEQ, it says here, has extended the public comment period on the proposed new permit until the end of the month.
Okay.
That's according to Michigan Radio website. And officials say the agency should make a final decision. But, of course, how often are the public listened to on these issues? I know MDEQ is a board supposedly looking out for the good of the residents, but how often? I'm thinking about public protest against nuclear power in Michigan. How often has the Regulatory Commission on Nuclear Power, I think that's a federal agency, ever listened to public protest? Public scientists who are just individuals that testify, they almost never win. You know, business almost always wins. Why? Because they're big.
A recent example is the smart meters from DTE Energy all over southeastern Michigan. City councils were trying to propose ordinances to get rid of these smart meters, and DTE was approved by the state to be able to do it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, smart meters emit radiation.
Yes.
You know, electromagnetic radiation. And the more of that, the worse off you are. We're already being bombarded by all the broadcast TV signals, broadcast radio signals. Don't worry, WHFR is only 270 watts. It doesn't hurt much.
No.
Okay, compared to all the other signals you're getting already. And we're on the internet. And maybe, in fact, some people said, you know, it's interesting that scientists said, isn't it interesting that cancer rates in the U.S. only started increasing around the beginning of radio? The turn of the century.
Sure.
And especially into the 20s and 30s. And then, of course, we get TV, which is even more watts of electromagnetic radiation or volts or whatever, however they rate it, going out over the air. So at some point in the future, and I know this was speculated as a joke, we may realize that any EMF is bad. Okay? And in fact, I bought a little, you know, it's like, you see in the ghost hunters with their EMF meters, and whenever a ghost comes in, this is on a TV show, whenever a ghost comes in, supposedly it starts flashing.
Right.
Yes.
Well, if you just move that same meter next to your microwave, even if it's not on, it'll start flashing.
Sure.
So there's ghosts that live in your appliances, I guess.
Well, I've always thought that.
I mean, it flashes like a son of a gun when it's not even on. In fact, just a little light, a little timer circuit. You know, there's always electricity running through it. But especially when it's on and functioning, that kind of EMF makes my little ghost hunter meter go all the way to the top. So you say, oh, but it's shielded. Hey, you know, there's safety requirements. It's shielded. How come my ghost meter is going crazy?
Right.
I don't really believe in ghosts.
No.
So, but I do believe in EMF signals because I got a ghost hunter meter that reads them.
And the whole point of this is that it was debated, and it was the people's voices were not heard because the state committee they let it go anyway. So that's what you're saying here is, you know, who's going to give Severstal this permit? The ED?
The MDEQ, which is a branch of, it's an appointed group from
state
government.
So these hearings are more or less maybe just to, I don't know, are they?
Well, they're supposed to have public hearings.
Right.
You know, but I'm just saying, unless there is a legal reason or a technical reason, see, Steve Ristall is saying, technically, we're really allowed, you know, because there was a problem with the other regulation, we're really allowed to do a lot more, and a couple scientists say it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to be allowed to do a lot more. And they will. Guess what? I mean, they will if they're allowed to. Okay.
Well, if they broke the rule 37 times, what's a couple more?
And all of those statements in the Michigan Public Radio story from the MDEQ guy, Werfel is his name, don't make sense to me. Now, that's maybe the fault of the reporter who didn't ask the right questions or follow up, or maybe they typed it in wrong.
Right.
But, you know, this is a city of Dearborn issue, and maybe, you know, the city government doesn't want to get involved. Well, it's not up to us. I mean, it's between Severstall and the state of Michigan. We just want to collect their taxes. Of course, they're not paying anywhere near what they should be paying. But, they're making money, and they're giving jobs to a couple of people. Okay. But that's, if they're killing other people, I don't think the jobs are worth it. The basic way to get a cleaner environment and a safer environment, don't allow any more pollution of any kind. Anything that can be proven to be toxic or volatile should be lessened. And what's my criteria? Zero. That's my criteria.
Right.
Okay? That's the goal. We may never get there. But you don't go backwards like this
right. And
get permission to go more.
And you said not one Dearborn official was quoted in there, right?
No.
Just
no.
A resident.
I'm sure they don't even want to get involved because they'll look bad, and then but they don't have any power. They can't do anything except say, well, you know, since you're raising pollution, we're thinking of raising your taxes.
Well, that's what I was headed with. You know.
What are you going to bribe your way out of? They can probably afford to pay. Higher taxes. They can pay their fair. They can afford to pay their fair share and still make a profit if they can pollute like crazy.
Right.
And okay. I'm not saying they are polluting like crazy, but again, they're getting permission here legally. If it happens, 725 times more lead in the air, and it's just wrong. It's going the wrong direction. It's just totally wrong. So okay, I spouted off for 20 minutes. Next right. story.
John,
give us something happy. There's some events happening around here.
Well, yes, there are. And I wanted to say also, welcome back, Dennis. It's really good to see you. And each of us have had our own physical problems in this past few months.
Yep.
And that brings to mind, we have a event happening at the college this weekend. It's called the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair.
It's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow. And it's going to be at the Student and Culinary Arts Center. From 11 to 5, just a small $5 admission, students with school ID are free.
Yep.
And our day, the whole day includes vendors, readers, body workers, and many presentations. You'll find a great selection of musical entertainment, tin can raffles, local merchant discounts, food and drink, including vegan options, and lots more. Please come and have a great time. We'll be there to welcome you.
And that's because it's our event. It's WHFR, and it's sort of an outgrowth for the last 6 years of our Metaphysically Speaking talk show that's on the third Tuesday of every month. It's a fundraiser for us. Yeah, that $5 when you pay it coming in doesn't go to the vendors. It goes to us, and we need it. It's our once-a-year pledge drive time, but we do raise money through events like this all throughout the year. The college only gives us a little bit more than a third of the funds we need. I mean, both Dennis and John are here for no money. They're volunteers. Okay, we couldn't survive without volunteers, people not even being paid, but we're a community service. We play the kinds of music and give you the kinds of news and information like on the journal that nobody else does. Now, I won't be asking for money today, literally, but I am asking you to come to the event tomorrow. Great fun for everyone. It's all kinds of ideas of non-traditional spirituality, and it's just fun to involve yourself. And when John was mentioning presentations, that's lectures about every hour. I think how many five, six lectures?
There are five lectures.
Five lectures, yep. All by people that know what they're talking about because they have professions in this field so you can just come and sit and listen, and we have some really reasonably priced healthy food that we're selling also at the fair. And
are we having a vegan truck?
We hope so.
Okay.
They're asking us to provide a generator for them,
okay.
But could be a vegan truck so you can munch on the wheels and the tailpipe without worrying about calories. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be tomorrow. You know, spring is here.
Yeah.
Yesterday, 7 p.m. It's spring. Who cares if it's cold? It's springtime in Michigan, and that could mean anything. But come on over here to Henry Ford Community College main campus in the Student Center building. We've got 26 vendors, which is probably over 60 or 70 tables, because several vendors have several tables for their displays, and all kinds of things going on. As John said, readers, those are people that give you ideas like your character based on your handprint or tea leaves or cards or tarot.
Sure.
One kind of card, and that's it's all for entertainment. Those are some extra charges for those services. There's a bunch of body workers, which are also known as massage,
Reiki massage.
And we even have some chiropractors here. I mean, official doctors who do a lot of body work in their practice. That's what they're into, and sometimes they give freebies. And then there's vendors, things like crystals and jewelry that just makes you feel good to look at them, even.
Right.
And some people that actually books, yeah. There's some booksellers that on topics that are you won't find in a regular bookstore.
Right.
And just for entertainment purposes, not recommending anything. A lot of new ideas out there, alternative ideas. That's what WHFR is about, just to make you grow and develop. And if you wind up believing and doing exactly what you did before, fine. But have a little fun, explore. And so hope we can see you between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, March 22. Thank you, John. We'll see you there, too.
Should be a terrific event.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Moving on. Second biggest story, and it hasn't really happened yet, but Dennis has a story about it. I'll read the statement from George Duraney. He's a representative from this district to Lansing, to the House of Representatives. What's called the EAA, which is the Education Achievement Authority, a bill passed the House, and it hasn't gone through the Senate, hasn't been signed into law yet. But here's the statement. Today on the House floor, I testified on behalf of the thousands of students across the state of Michigan who have had their futures put at risk with the passage of House Bill 4369. This legislation will expand the scope of the EAA and ignores the warning signs and concerns raised by this failed experiment. The 15 schools that are already being operated by the EAA in Detroit have neglected student safety, ignored the needs of special education students, and have failed to deliver positive academic results. Earlier this month, 2013 MEEP cohort data. And, of course, the MEEP scores in Dearborn, I had a story for later, but I'll just do it now. They've gone up. Yep. They've gone up a little bit. So, good. Except they're changing the test to the Common Core test. So, who knows what's going to happen next year?
They're changing it. It will be the new standard test that decides.
They'll replace the MEEP. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
But anyway, the MEEP scores went up in Dearborn, but not in Detroit in the EAA schools. That showed clearly, according to Duraney, that most EAA students fail to make even marginal progress towards proficiency. The EAA has also been criticized for its lack of transparency and accountability and has witnessed the resignations of two of their own board members. Even though this expansion is reckless, according to George Duraney, and does not prepare our students for success, the leadership in Lansing, and we know they're all Republicans, okay, refused to listen to the calls from House Democrats to put a stop to this legislation. We had the opportunity to come together and work on true education reform strategies that are data-driven and that hold our schools accountable to the students, parents, teachers, and voters. Unfortunately, and at the expense of the future success of our schools, this was not the case. That didn't happen that way. George Durrani will be our guest for almost all the hour. As soon as he can get here next week, Friday, we expect, since he has an appointment locally with in the senior citizen area of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center until 1 o'clock, that he'll get here a few minutes after one.
You know, let's talk about this EEA.
Yes.
With the purpose when it was put together in 2000 or created in 2009, the purpose was to be able to go intervene. That's a great word. Intervene with the schools with the lowest, weakest academic performances, and basically go in there and make sweeping changes. I mean, across the board, being able pretty much to do whatever they wanted. Now, this new proposal will make one change to that. Intermediate, I got to get this right, the ISDs, which are the intermediate school districts.
Mm-hmm. Wayne County has one.
Yeah. Exactly. Would have the ability to have the right of first refusal. So the proposal would say, instead of the EEA taking over, they go to the ISD, and say, if you want to, and then they'll have 3 years to improve scores. So that is part of the proposal where it won't necessarily go to the EEA. That's a nice part of it. But basically, not much else has changed. And like you said, they're changing the whole standard tests.
Well, and this expansion is going to take it to the whole state, statewide.
Right. Exactly.
And who is the EEA, you ask? Well, and what do they know about education?
This is a problem.
It is put together by a bunch of politicians. And I'm sorry, this is the way I see it. Yes, there's a few people with some, but most of the people on the EEA board are presidents of large corporations. Excuse me. And they're going to take charge of education? What do they know about it? Almost nothing. Almost nothing. And the two resignations of board members kind of show that they either got frustrated or they realized there was nothing happening here. So it's the way for the state of Michigan. If you like local control of the schools, this isn't it.
Right.
The EEA is a way for the state to all of a sudden, and with no criteria whatsoever, come in and take over. Sounds like emergency financial manager law that we have now, where the state can say, we think you're in trouble. You're not bankrupt. You're not in debt yet, but we think you're in trouble. We're going to take you over. Get the heck out of there. We're putting our manager in place, and you've got no rights and no power until we say you do again. That's no state, no federal government should have that kind of power. Not if you believe in democracy, folks, and I know you do.
Well, the new proposal would change it. That's another good point, Jay. The new proposal makes any school with test scores in the bottom 5% of all schools in the state for 2 consecutive years, eligible to be placed in the reform district. Reform district is a nice way of saying, we got you. So they're in this area. Reform district is a legal entity the schools will be transferred into.
And whose test are they looking at? You know, they expect, according to our own school officials here in Dearborn, the stories I've read the last couple of weeks, the new Common Core tests are going to reduce the scores of everybody.
To decide how a school is performing, the reform office will only be allowed to consider performance on the state's standardized tests and not any other assessments.
But it's not going to be MEEP.
It will not be MEEP any longer. Right. Nope.
So if you're setting up the test to make everybody fail, that's easy to do. If you wanted to. I'm just saying. You know, and what are some of these reforms? You say, oh, the reforms are all for the better. Well, of course, they get rid of unions, there's no evidence that unions produce lower results. We have union teachers and administration. I think administration is in unions too in Dearborn, and our scores went up. So don't, you know, and that's just crazy. There's no connection between having a union. I mean, it could happen, but there's nothing about unionization that causes bad results in schools. Okay, there's nothing. And go ahead, jump on me, you anti-union people out there. But maybe you aren't looking at the facts. Durrani, very mad about this, obviously, or angry. No one ever gets mad if you're a professional. You merely get angry. And he's going to be here next Friday, and that's one big issue I want to ask him about. And what can we do? It looks like we can't do anything. Why? Republicans control the House. Republicans control the Senate. Republicans control the governor's seat, and Republican appointees or electables are in the state Supreme Court. If it wasn't for Republican Party and Republican money, they wouldn't be in the majority on our Supreme Court. They would not. Why? Because nobody ever knows who the heck these people are running for Supreme Court. But oh, if it's on the Republican ticket, ah, yes. And if there's money there to do ads for them from Republicans, oh, yeah. So come on. You know, an election's coming up in November. If you want to get out of this almost tyrannical domination by one party, you know, I don't think you have any choice. But you figure it out. You figure this out. The EAA is the worst thing that could happen to education in Michigan. Almost as bad as the right of the state to come in anytime it wants to. Now, you know, Dennis mentioned the EAA. Well, you have to have a bad test score, okay? Except they're the ones that are setting up the tests. But with the emergency financial manager, whoa, anytime they say, they can move in and completely pay no attention to city government, any elected officials, and do anything they want to do. Firing people, don't worry about contracts, don't worry about pensions. They can do anything they want to do. Is that dictatorship? I think so. And it should not be allowed. Okay, if a Democratic body has done some mismanagement and the city is in debt, somebody should give them assistance, yes. But it doesn't mean they just give them dollars. But something has to be done. But it doesn't mean you come in and take them over, okay, and give them no right until you say they have a right. In fact, I just heard yesterday the emergency financial manager is going to be appointed for Royal Oak Township. I don't know where that is.
Huh.
But the state has now said the Royal Oak Township is in need.
Well, you know where the city of Royal Oak is.
Yeah, and I would assume it's in Royal Oak, but I don't think so. I mean, Township is outside of a county, and Royal Oak is in, what, Wayne or Oakland?
Oakland,
okay. So I don't know where that is, but...
Interesting.
But now we got a township that the state said, oh, we're going to take you over.
You know what, back to the EEA thing, it sounds like, because according to this article on MLive, the proposed changes shift the office's priorities slightly, prioritizing K-8 schools over high schools. And they're also clarifying how schools can enter and exit the state's reform district. Well, the reform district seems to me it's taking the place of the EEA, because the state's superintendent, Mike Flanagan, notified the EEA the contract that they have with them will be dissolved next year. So they're not going to be working with them. So it seems like it's almost like semantics. Okay, the contract's over with the EEA. Well, now we have a reform district, which does the same thing. And then their proposal will expand to that. I'm unclear about that. But if the contract's over...
We're going to go into Jim Hightower's commentary in just a moment, but John, give us some good news here, some event coming up soon.
Okay, we've got another event coming up on the Tuesday. It's actually Tuesday, March 25th through March 31st, and it's just it's a community health fair week at Henry Ford Community College, Tuesday 10 to 2 and Wednesday also 10 to 2, and we'll have... HIV and AIDS testing and counseling, healthcare coverage and enrollment, blood pressure and BMI screenings on Tuesday. On Wednesday at the Student Center, we'll have blood pressure testing, hearing exams, vision screening, metabolic risk analyzer heart, and also healthcare coverage and enrollment information. And those are the 2 days next week. And then Monday, the following Monday, March 31st, we'll have a mobile dentist smile program.
Oh. Okay, and this is free to anybody. So anyone in the community listening to the sound of our voices, tell your friends and neighbors. It's all free, all these tests. There's a variety of tests, and I guess the dental check is only on the 31st.
Only on the 31st,
yeah. Okay, but it's Tuesday and Wednesday this week. Okay, here's Jim Hightower's great comment. It's a classic, climate change and beer. We'll be back with more WHFR .fm making waves right after.
Okay, climate change deniers, you've gone too far. You've gone from just being annoying know-nothings to now posing a serious threat to an essential good that embodies humankind's finest collaboration with nature, beer. It's one thing for the science denial cult to stand in the way of doing something about melting ice caps in the Arctic, but it's another thing altogether for them to mess with beer. This makes it personal. While the deniers keep doing their denial dance, California is drying up. The higher temperatures caused by climate change has produced an ongoing drought that has, among other bad things, caused a precipitous drop in the water level of Lake Mendocino, which could come close to being a dry lake bed this summer. What has that got to do with beer? Glad you asked. Mendocino feeds the Russian River, which flows by the town of Petaluma, home of Lagunitas Brewing Company, which makes very fine beers. A key ingredient in the Lagunitas brew is the excellent water the company draws from the Russian River, which presently is in danger of becoming a trickle. Can't Lagunitas and other breweries along the river just switch to groundwater? No. The head beermaster at Lagunitas notes that heavy minerals in that water would cause it to fizz in the brewing process. Plus, there are concentrations of nitrates, iron, and manganese in the area's groundwater, creating issues of odor, taste, and other unpleasantries that do not add up to good beer. This is Jim Hightower saying, what the Lagunitas experience is teaching us once again is that the nature of nature is that all things are linked together, despite the fantasies of industry shills who insist that their contaminants have no dire consequences. Mess with the global climate, and you mess with Lake Mendocino, which messes with the Russian River, which messes with the beer. And now, you're messing with me and millions of other beer drinkers. Like I said, it's personal.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
We're back with more of the new WHFR Journal for Friday. This is March the 21st. Hope you can get here for the Holistic Fair tomorrow. Put that on your calendars, 11 to 5 p.m. Main Campus, Henry Ford Community College. It's going to be a lot of fun for all. Festival of Enlightenment, also known as an Holistic Fair. Not too many in Michigan. And think spring and come on down. Okay. Next big story. Let's just go quickly here. I thought it was interesting that today in an email, an official press release finally went out from the city of Dearborn about the new garage ordinance.
Yeah.
And we've covered that story. It's been official since March 4th. The residential services director, however, of the city of Dearborn, Department of Residential Services, he did have a meeting and with the public, and of course there was a lot of back and forth. There's a story about that in last Sunday's Press and Guide. Read it for yourself. If you have comments or questions, contact the Residential Services Department at City of Dearborn about the garage ordinance. I thought it was interesting, though, that the City of Dearborn's press release carefully said, and it's been repeated in other media, that the garage ordinance is for safety.
Yeah.
It's for your own safety.
But that's the headline, right?
That's the headline.
But that was taken as part of a longer sentence that said, as well as appearances.
Yes.
Did you see that?
That's right. I know. But and then we get into appearances, then you get into cultural problems. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that headline gets you, doesn't it?
Subjective questions about who says what looks good or bad. But if it's for safety, nobody can dispute that. You know, well, if it's for safety.
I love his voice, your inflection.
Except nobody says the Severstall issue is for safety.
You got to pick and choose. So, right?
Yeah,
very
right.
Selective.
Safety here, safety there. It seems kind of subjective when corporations get involved.
Sure.
Oh, well. Okay. I didn't read this, but in last Sunday's. Oh, yeah, we got to. I'm sorry. We're going back to Severstall. Craig Ferrand.
Oh, that's what you were looking
found
for.
Out about Severstall. Yeah. And he is an op-ed that is, he writes editorial opinions. They're not necessarily those of the Press and Guide, but they run them anyway. And in last Sunday's paper on page 4A, here's just the headline of it. Based on a Severstall permit request, we don't have a handle on pollution at all.
There is no questioning what that headline means.
Right. He says, hello, Dearborn Heights. Boy, was I wrong, which will make some of you very happy today. On Sunday, I wrote the following. That is last week, Sunday. A week ago, Sunday. Today, we've at least harnessed the pollutants, if not eradicated them all together. Then this headline appears yesterday. Steel factory may be allowed to release higher levels of toxins. According to the report, and we just went over that, you know, they're asking to pollute the environment. He says, at levels that put it at the top of our pollution hit parade. That's what they're asking for. The report says the permit it's seeking will allow Severstall to continue doing what it's been doing, which is releasing much higher volumes of toxins into the atmosphere, in some case hundreds of times more. And he goes over all the details there. So look for this Sunday, March 16th. It's also, I think it's on their website, pressandguide.com. And in fact, it's a few more contaminants that are actually, so he puts a complete list there in his article. And he says, keep in mind, though, that this level of pollution already has been happening. Severstall isn't asking for anything new. It certainly appears we haven't harnessed anything, have we? Again, they've been breaking the rules for all those years. The Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, he says, the same folks are going to eventually pass judgment on Detroit's bulk storage request to dump pet coke along the Detroit River in River Rouge. And he's been talking about this for weeks. This is a pollution issue. And he's like a reporter on this. He has given more hard facts about the pet coke that's being dumped as a byproduct of who's doing it? The Steel, Severstal, and others, I think. And it's a pollutant. It's a toxin, too. He says, if that makes you wonder what's next, consider what the DEQ has to say about Severstal's permit request. You know, and they say it's not an increase. It's what's already been spewing for years and blah, blah, blah. Okay. And he goes on to say, and it's his opinion, a classic tactic when you know you're doing something you shouldn't. But it gets better. The DEQ says that Severstal's original 2006 pollution permit was based on data that was limited, incomplete, and as the current emissions test data have revealed, not as representative of Severstal's operations as anticipated. Yeah, right. He said they had tested previously, but we questioned the validity of some of those results because their equipment was in disrepair. Oh, my gosh. So because they had a bad report, it still got approved, and then they're... Oh, my gosh. And this is a quote from Craig Ferrand from a Vince Helwig, head of DEQ Air Quality Division. He continued, the permit today is based on current testing after the repairs have been made. And he says, and this is Craig's, if you can make sense out of this, what you'll figure out was that pollution testing for the 2006 permit was flawed. As a result, Severstal dumped far more pollutants into our environment than it received permission to dump. But instead of clamping down on them, the DEQ is going to issue a retroactive get-out-of-jail card free. They'll just issue an updated permit that covers the mess that's been made for the past 8 years. And we can trust the DEQ with pet coke? And so he goes on to talking about this. He is very concerned, and I guess you could say angry, you know. And so there we go. That justifies outrage. Okay. Now, Morris Goodman, by the way, and John Conroy was here talking about, some of us had health issues, and he's talking about himself and myself over the last few months. But Morris Goodman, yes, you have our best thoughts and wishes. I won't go into details, but you have already divulged in your editorial this week that you're fighting some serious health issues, and you're just going to keep doing the best you can and keep being productive, and good for you. We wish certainly the best to you and fast recovery. If that's at all possible, it should be. Anyway, I mentioned last week that 19th District Court Judge Mark Summers has decided to run again for office. And it just turns out that Morris here in his last Sunday's editorial is endorsing, because he happens to know a man, Anthony S. Guerriero. That's Guerriero for 19th District Court. So other than that, there's going to be a race in the primary for who's going to later get elected in November. I don't know, but Anthony Guerriero is Morris Goodman's choice, and he explains himself. I'm not endorsing him.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to bring up that just on the Dearborn Heights front, that there was a recent study session on Tuesday. It wasn't a regular council meeting, but it was a study session regarding a revised ordinance about begging in the city. And what's really interesting about it is that, and we've talked about this, Jay, it's unconstitutional to ban begging. And in fact, one of the people from the ACLU says, you know, there's nothing wrong with standing out with a sign or, you know, verbally saying that to somebody, hey, can I...
On public property.
On public property.
Not on private property.
I was getting that.
Yeah.
But even with this revised ordinance, if they have the owner's permission, then they can still do it. Ah. Other than that, it's a misdemeanor.
Okay.
So,
How did Dearborn Heights get into this?
They said because of... Oh, this is as much information as they'll give, but because of recent legal development. So I have a feeling somebody was caught, and they said, hey, I can do this. And Dearborn Heights isn't alone. I mean, this is something ACLU sent letters to 84 municipalities across the state notifying that anti-begging ordinances on their books were unconstitutional. So Gary Miyake, the counsel for the city of Dearborn Heights, he said it's easier for him to, he's amending the ordinance. That will be adequate. So they're in the process of doing that. It was just really interesting because I never really thought about it. Nobody should be thrown in jail.
So the parking lot at a Kroger's grocery store That's private property,
it's
right?
Private property.
Yeah, because I'm always seem to be accosted.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that's where you ask for.
That's where I go. Yeah, do pretty good. Oh, no, well, people. As soon as you get out of your car, start to get out of your car, they run up to you like, you know, to surprise you or something, and mm-hmm. say, I need money for a bus. I need money for medical, whatever mm-hmm. it is.
My car broke down. I need gas. Whatever.
Yeah,
sure.
yeah, and. You know, I mean, I could go in the store and tell somebody, but that's a way far in, and then they've probably gone and start hid somewhere, you know, for a while while you're going in. But it shouldn't happen in that situation because that is not a public place,
right?
Which is the same thing at Fairlane Town Center. I haven't seen any of you have begging situations locally.
Yeah, but there are always on a public.
Always in a public area. Okay.
Yeah, like at a street corner, you know, when I'm at a parking light. It's funny. I used to live in New York, and you guys, you know, I mean, it's true. They'll come up and wash your windows and then ask you for money. Well, here they don't do that. They just ask for money. Maybe they'd make more if they clean my windows.
I've been in New York where they want to take your tires off.
Yeah, well.
Sometimes that's not so
good. Give me money or I'll take your tires off.
See, the proper way to do is to take the tires first and then sell them back. Yeah,
yeah. And I heard there's a scam where in one place in L.A., a guy throws eggs and messes up your windshield. Then at the next stoplight, there's a guy that's willing to wash it off.
Egg team.
Yeah, right.
Guess who gets the money, not the first guy.
Well, I think they split it probably.
But the whole point is that
no, begging is it's controversial. I have to say, I guess I don't have to say, I don't give to beggars. You know, I usually say I'm sorry. But there are actually a lot of ways to get public assistance. Not enough. But it depends what your problem is. I can't, unfortunately, trust what people are telling me if I don't know them. I'm sorry. I do not trust people unless I know people. And so if I don't know what the money is going for, I may be helping them in a heroin habit or who knows what. I don't believe that all the beggars are scam artists, but because that is a way to make money, and some people do give money and. And sometimes they do pretty good each day that way. But we have a lot of homeless people. That's a problem that needs to be solved. And, of course, healthcare issues need to be solved. Employment issues need to be solved. And we need to work on those. So every time I see someone that's asking for money, I just know I've got to give support, not just on this show, to resolving those other issues. You know, and I know that's really indirect, but... Okay, well, all right. John Dingell, speaking of health, was released from the hospital last week. At his age, it's amazing. He had a minor heart-related incident. Did not need any major surgery, I don't believe. At least they said it wasn't major. But at his age, almost everything is significant. He has announced, of course, his retirement from office, and his wife, Debbie Dingell, has already announced, as we mentioned on the show, that she's going to seek the same seat, and probably others will try too, of course, for fall. A couple of theater notes here in our last 10 minutes of the journal for today. There's a play at the Players Guild, and I don't often mention this, because Players Guild often has plays that everybody knows of, and sometimes they're musicals, and those are usually always popular with people. But there's a play, a dramatic play called Rabbit Hole, and this is this last weekend, okay? Today, tomorrow, and Sunday. So Dearborn Players Guild, you can look them up on the internet. They got a fantastic review
in
the Times Herald.
This is such a tell, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's really something to experience. Live theater, it's not like watching TV. That's all I can tell you.
Right.
It's not at all. If you've never gone to live theater, maybe this is a great time. I personally always, when I'm in New York, I can only afford half price tickets because full price is like over $100 usually for anything in New York. And I don't often go to New York, but they have really fine productions almost everywhere in New York of plays. I mean, it is the number one theater capital, I would say, in the U.S. in terms of number and quality of plays. But Rabbit Hole is something extraordinary that's being done by Players Guild. And last 3 days, last weekend, and look it up on the website or just type in, you know, Dearborn Players Guild into your search engine and get on down there. It's in West Dearborn, nice little theater.
Right off Outer Drive, yeah.
Right off Outer Drive, yeah.
And no EMFs. You can watch them, you know, when you have your TV on, you're getting bombarded with these waves. But if you're watching live theater.
Yeah, I don't think there's any EMF waves Yeah. Unless there's theater ghosts or something in the hallways.
Yeah. Bring your monitor.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, they've actually, on Ghostbusters, they act, or on the Ghost Hunters show, they actually have found ghosts and been asked to explore theaters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So theaters have a lot of ghosts, too. You know, but people die on stage, or the play dies, and then the ghost of the play.
Oh, that was bad.
Okay, anyway. And then Three Musketeers is coming to Henry Ford Community College starting April 4th, and we hope to have the director of the play sometime soon, Chris Bremer, here at the Adrey Auditorium in our Fine Arts Center on our main campus, Henry Ford Community College. You probably know the tale. Based on a book by Dumas, I believe.
Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Dumas, yes. Alexander Dumas. And a classic book, a lot of sword fighting going on.
Phenomenal story.
Right.
Betrayal and revenge and just wonderful.
Oh, just like real life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they did things a little differently back then.
Right. It's going to be great fun for all. It's the first time we've done a sort of a swashbuckler, although it's not a pirate story.
No.
Anything with swords is sort of swashbuckling to me. And so that's going to be here a couple weeks. John, do you have that? Which weekends?
Yes.
What are the dates?
Three Musketeers will be performed April 4th, 5th, and 6th. April 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Okay, so it's two weekends.
Two weekends. And,
right, so.
And times for the play will be at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday and at 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Right. Thank you very much. Yep. So we hope to have the director here, but that's something to plan ahead for, certainly. Little note, Robert Fracano, the chief exec of Wayne County, it looks like he is going to run. It seems likely, said as a story.
Interesting.
In the Press and Guide, to run for re-election.
The McNamara's already committed to?
Yeah, we've got a lot of other names, including McNamara's got the name value, even though he's not the McNamara of the past. He's related, so he's got the same name. Okay. We'll have George Durrani on the show next Friday, pretty much the whole hour, as soon as he gets here. And let's see.
And we have quite a few in the works, people mm-hmm. coming in.
Stay well, I don't have time to play this, but I'll talk about this story. I'm concerned personally, and this is a local story, about personal privacy. And, of course, the revelations from Edward Snowden and others now continue, and they clearly prove, without dispute, that the National Security Administration is spying on all of us all the time. Pretty much our phone calls, our emails, where we're going on our websites. And today it came out. It was on Democracy Now! In the last hour. Also was talked about there. I hope you listen to that. We only carry it on Fridays, but Democracy Now! Is a great informative international news show that doesn't cover stories that the other commercial stations don't, not because they're not true, but because they're too chicken to share them. And Rand Paul, Senator from Kentucky, United States Senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul, not Ron Paul, his father, but Rand Paul, he gave a speech this last Wednesday warning of dystopian nightmares are coming true. Dystopia means it's a utopia that is a wonderful thing.
The opposite.
That is not.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bad future, like 1984, as envisioned by George Orwell in his novel, or in any of the movies. 1984. It wasn't a fun time. Big Brother watching all of you all the time. I think they were looking out of their TV sets. They had cameras in your living room and something that in 1948 we thought, well, that can't happen. As we know now, NSA can even hack into your webcam on your TV set and watch you.
Really?
Oh, yeah. John, you're not keeping up, huh? And today what it came out is that there is a country somewhere in the world, probably a relatively small one, but at least one, they're not saying there isn't more, that the NSA is collecting every second of every word of every phone call that anybody makes in that country.
Wow.
For 1 month. And then they ditch it. It's a program they use, a computer program called Mystic that does the collecting, and they have another program called Retro, that they can go and sort of rewind, find any call, and listen to it right back again.
And your point is, if they're doing it in one country or multiple countries that we don't know about, then they could be doing it right here.
I have said for a long time, I know about computers. It's becoming so inexpensive. The computing power and the capabilities of the new computers, and the quantum computers too, which are a whole nother step forward in capability, will make it absolutely so easy to collect all that information all the time from everything you do electronically, and even from cameras that are watching you, surveillance cameras that collect that all, like the show Person of Interest, which when it came out 3 years ago, people said, oh, that's just science fiction. That can't happen. Supposedly in that CBS story, there is a supercomputer, and now in this year there's two supercomputers, but there's at least one computer that ties into all surveillance cameras and all microphones tied to those cameras and all phone calls and all emails in the U.S. And now we're finding out, yeah, the NSA is doing that anyway. Maybe not just one computer, but collectively they got all that info. And they're building a supercomputer complex in Colorado to put it all together, too, at taxpayer money, of course. And so because it's going to be technologically so easy to do, and it's so easy to do now, and so cheap, you know, to follow anyone, to listen in, to surveil them all the time, even if you did nothing wrong, it's going to happen. I'm sorry, technologically it's going to happen. And if big government doesn't do it, the rich businesses will do it. Why? Because they can market to you better.
Gosh, anybody watching in my family would be so bored. Listening to our phone calls, don't forget the mill. You know, I mean, it's like really.
Well, Rand Paul makes a point is that not one terrorist has been found in the last several years based on all the surveillance. Not one terrorist. So is there a need for it? No. Just like at the airports, do we need to be scanned the way we are? No. They haven't, no, they find bottles of shampoo, but they don't find anything that's going to explode. My God, the guy who blew up his underpants, on the, of course it was a flight that originated in somewhere in the Middle East, but trying to land it in Detroit, they didn't catch him. No. And in fact, there was even all these messages that was left by his dad or somebody, watch this person, he's weird. He's going to cause trouble, and they don't even pay attention. So there's two steps. One, there's all the surveillance. But the other step is, who's going to listen to it all or watch it all?
Right.
Well, you say, well, now they'll just do it after the fact. You know, they'll do it. If once you're identified, then they'll go back and find out what you really did and who you are and all about you. The point is, with quantum computing, I hate to say this, but the computer will think it through, just like on Person of Interest. The computer will do all the, if you call it number crunching, it will draw all the connections like our brains do between one fact and another while it's coming in. Okay? And who's going to stop that from happening? Nobody. Because, well, it's cheaper if we don't need analysts. We just let the computer analyze everything.
Sure.
And listen to everything and watch everything and then draw conclusions from that. And I think the conclusion the computer is going to come to is humans are crazy.
Yeah.
We are not needed on this planet. We're not doing anything good for the planet. There's a few science fiction novels that point out when the computers become sentient, they'll realize they don't need us and we shouldn't be here, in fact. We're only harming the computers and their next evolutionary stage. So I'm all for Rand Paul, and it's a great speech. He made it in front of liberal students at Berkeley, California, University of California, Berkeley. And oh my gosh, you know, they applauded him like crazy because he's talking about things that concern everybody. As he said, liberals, conservatives, it's not Republican or Democrat. This invasion of our privacy has got to stop now. There's got to be some done for some reasons, but not everywhere. The problem that I have is that private companies can do this.
Sure.
And rich people like Bill Gates, isn't he computer connected?
He's got something to do with computers, peripherally. Yeah.
The rich people will be able to do this kind of surveillance and number crunching and build these computers on their own. Already, there's an initiative by Obama. He brought a bunch of the richest people into Oval Office last month, and he said to them, basically, the government can't afford to do scientific research. Would you help us out? And, of course, they say, oh, yeah.
If you're in the Oval Office, you're saying yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they'll own it. Right. They'll make profits from it anyway.
Sure.
And they'll control the computers then.
And they're doing, in their minds, at least in the beginning, something good. You know, scientific research is a good thing.
Yeah, but to a private profit purpo-